and welcome to Sperio, the local voice of our hemisphere here on WMBR Cambridge. I'm Mary, and I'm joined in the studio today by my co-host Jasmine.
Hi.
And Froy.
Hello.
And we have an hour of news, discussion, music, and more lined up for you, featuring guests. And our guests are Matthew Andrews and Alana Epstein, and they're with CISPES, the Committee in Solidarity with the People of El Salvador. And it's a really amazing organization, and they were observing the elections, so they have really exciting stuff to tell us about that. But first,
we'd like to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT.
And
you're very welcome to call us at the show at our phone number, 617-253-8810. You can call us in English, in Spanish, in Korean, in French, or in Portuguese. We will try to respond to whatever you want to say. You can also email us at esperio@wmbr.org. That is spelled in Spanish, esperio@wmbr.org. And of course, you can catch this show and all the previous shows in our archive section, wmbr.org, or in our own website, web.mit/hemisphere.
All right, great. So before we talk to our wonderful guests, I think Froy has some news lined up for us. Is that right?
That's right. So you want to hear some?
Yes.
All right, start. Gay rights advocates have won two major new victories. Tuesday, the Vermont State Legislature voted to override a veto from Governor Jim Douglas and legalize gay marriage. Vermont becomes the first state to recognize same-sex marriage through legislative action. At least 9 other state legislatures are considering similar measures. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C., the City Council voted to recognize same-sex marriages performed in other states. The vote sets up a showdown with Congress, which approves D.C.'s laws under home rule. En español, los defensores de los derechos de los homosexuales lograron dos nuevas victorias muy importantes. El martes, la Asamblea Legislativa del Estado de Vermont aprobó la anulación del veto del gobernador Jim Douglas y legalizó el matrimonio entre los homosexuales. Vermont se convierte así en el primer estado en reconocer el matrimonio entre personas del mismo sexo y a través de la acción legislativa. Al menos 9 asambleas generales estatales más están considerando la posibilidad de adoptar medidas similares. Mientras tanto, en Washington, D.C., el Consejo Municipal votó a favor de reconocer los matrimonios entre homosexuales celebrados en otros estados. La votación supone que en un enfrentamiento con el Congreso, el cual aprueba las leyes del Distrito de Columbia de acuerdo con la autonomía gubernamental. Some other news. In Peru, former President Alberto Fujimori has been sentenced to 25 years in prison for overseeing a series of human rights abuses during the 1990s. On Tuesday, a 3-judge panel found Fujimori guilty of crimes against humanity, including orderly massacres that killed 25 people and the kidnappings of 2 political opponents. The verdict marks the first time an elected head of state has been extradited back to their home country and convicted of human rights abuses. En Perú, el expresidente Alberto Fujimori fue sentenciado a 20 años de prisión por haber supervisado una serie de abusos a los derechos humanos durante la década de los 90. El martes, un tribunal integrado por 3 jueces encontró a Fujimori culpable de crímenes contra la humanidad, como haber ordenado la ejecución de masacres en las que murieron 25 personas o el secuestro de 12 opositores políticos. Es la primera vez que un jefe de Estado electo es extraditado a su país de origen y condenado por abusos a los derechos humanos. In some other Latin American news, a group of Democratic lawmakers has wrapped up a visit to Cuba. The 5-day trip included meetings with Cuban President Raúl Castro and former President Fidel Castro. Congress members Barbara Lee of California said the Castros renewed call for direct talks with the United States. The Obama administration is expected to announce plans to abolish limits on family travels and cash remittances to Cuba at the summit of the Americas in Trinidad later this month. The move will allow Cubans living in the United States to travel freely to the island instead of once a year as at present. But Obama has still rejected calls to lift the embargo. En español, un grupo de legisladores demócratas culminaron una visita a Cuba. Este viaje de 5 días incluyó reuniones con el presidente cubano Raúl Castro y el expresidente Fidel Castro. La congresista Barbara Lee de California dijo que los hermanos Castro reiteraron los pedidos de mantener conversaciones directas con los Estados Unidos. Se espera que el gobierno de Obama anuncie planes de abolir los límites de los viajes familiares y los giros de dinero a Cuba en la Cumbre de las Américas, que se celebrará este mes en Trinidad y Tobago. Esta medida permitiría que los cubanos que viven en Estados Unidos viajen libremente a la isla, en lugar de hacerlo únicamente una vez al año, como sucede actualmente. No obstante, Obama rechazó los pedidos de levantar el embargo. Back in the United States, the former CIA operative Luis Posada Carriles has been indicted on charges of lying about his role in several 1997 bombings at tourist areas in Cuba. The new charges mark the first time the U.S. government has acknowledged Posada's role in carrying out attacks. A military right-wing Cuban exile, long supported by the U.S. government, Posada is also wanted in Cuba and Venezuela for the 1976 bombing of a Cuban airliner that killed 73 people. The Bush administration harbored Posada and rejected calls for his extradition. The new indictment accuses Posada of soliciting other individuals to carry out bombings in Cuba. El exagente de la CIA, Luis Posada Carriles, fue acusado de mentir sobre su participación en varios atentados con bombas que tuvieron lugar en el 97 en áreas turísticas de Cuba. Los nuevos cargos presentados en su contra representan la primera vez que el gobierno estadounidense reconoció la participación de Posada en los ataques. Posada, un militante cubano exiliado de la derecha, respaldado durante mucho tiempo por el gobierno estadounidense, también está requerido por la justicia en Cuba y en Venezuela por el atentado con bomba contra un avión cubano en el 76, que provocó la muerte de 73 personas. El gobierno de Bush dio refugio a Posada y rechazó los pedidos de extradición. La nueva acusación contra Posada establece que él solicitó a otros individuos que llevaran a cabo los ataques de bomba. Finalmente, the last piece of news. In Bolivia, President Evo Morales has launched a hunger strike to pressure lawmakers to approve a law on electoral reform. The measure will increase representation for low-income rural areas. Morales urged support for the law on Tuesday in La Paz. Bolivian President Evo Morales said, "The people come first. The country comes first. Later come the interests of the regions and sectors. I send a true greeting to those comrades who are defending democracy, the people's vote from outside the country, and other demands of a structural nature through this effort they make, through this hunger strike." En Bolivia, el presidente Evo Morales inició una huelga de hambre como forma de presionar a los legisladores para que aprueben una ley de reforma electoral. La medida aumentaría la representación de las zonas rurales de bajos ingresos. El jueves, Morales pidió respaldo a la ley en La Paz. Él dijo, "Primero es el pueblo, primero la patria y después los intereses sectoriales o regionales. Y saludo de verdad, compañeros dirigentes, de juntos asumir la defensa de la democracia, del voto del pueblo, del voto del extranjero y otras reivindicaciones del carácter estructural mediante un esfuerzo que hacen y ese esfuerzo es la huelga de hambre." And these are some of the news for this week.
Thanks, Roy. Before we move on to talk to our guests, Matthew and Alana, we're going to listen to some songs that Mary prepared for us.
We're going to listen to Vieja Oligarquía by Los Torregostes de Marazán, and it's actually El Salvadoran music, so that's kind of exciting.
¡Muerte a la oligarquía! ¡Muerte! Recuerdos, lluvia de llanto y lamento de lo que por mucho tiempo
aquí trata de masacrar nuestro pueblo.
Le dan ataque a doña oligarquía,
ay, ay, ay.
Hasta diarrea le da al
tío San,
por tanto corte que le pega a la guerrilla.
¿Dónde?
En Guatapa, San Vicente, Yalate y Morazán, que la guerra de los pobres
ha comenzado,
la paz para los ricos
ha terminado.
La guerra de los pobres
ha comenzado,
la paz para los ricos
ha terminado.
La buscar la cabulla, mejor mira. Ya vea.
Para que la oye. En su agonía. Está muy grave la vieja oligarquía, que tiene una inyección causada por la guerrilla.
Caramba.
Está muy grave la vieja oligarquía,
caramba,
que tiene una inyección causada
por la guerrilla, me duele por aquí, me duele por allá, y de esa enfermedad ya no se podrá curar.
Me duele por aquí, me duele por allá, de esa enfermedad ya no se podrá curar.
Dolores en Chalá, te siguen un surután, lo que la va a matar es la infección en Morazán.
Dolores en Chalá, te siguen un surután, lo que la va a matar es la infección en Morazán.
Que la guerra de los pobres
ha comenzado,
la paz para los ricos
ha terminado.
La guerra de los pobres
ha comenzado,
la paz para los ricos
ha terminado.
Batallón de yanqui la podrán curar.
Ya vienen ni cañones, ni bombas ni retores. Y batallón de yanqui la podrán curar.
Le duele por aquí, le duele por allá, y le huele WhatsApp cerca de la capital.
Le duele por aquí, le duele por allá, y le huele WhatsApp cerca de la capital.
Le duele por delante y le duele por detrás, esta vieja sí merece que la acaben de matar.
Le duele por delante y le duele por detrás, esta vieja sí merece que la acaben de matar.
Que la guerra de los pobres
ha comenzado,
la paz para los ricos
ha terminado.
Que la guerra de los pobres
ha comenzado,
la paz para los ricos
ha terminado.
Para los ricos
ha terminado,
que la guerra de los pobres
ha comenzado,
la paz para los ricos
ha terminado.
Welcome back to Spherio. We are here on WMBR Cambridge. Today we'll be talking about the recent election in El Salvador. Before we go into that, I'd like to tell you guys that you guys are more than welcome to call us at 617-253-8810. So we'd like to give you guys background information on what has been going on in El Salvador and the recent election results. Kat is going to read this article that we found on the Upside Down World website. It's talking about politics in Latin America in general, but I think it'll be very interesting.
Thank you, Jasmine. The president-elect of El Salvador, Mauricio Funes, together with his supporters, celebrated the victory in the elections held this Sunday in the Central American country, giving a speech in which he said that with their vote, the people had signed a new accord on peace and reconciliation. Shortly after the Supreme Electoral Tribunal, RTSE, issued its second bulletin that officially confirmed the FMLN's lead, Funes addressed the nation, congratulating on the citizens who participated in the elections. I want to thank all who voted for me, all who defeated fear, all who chose the path of hope, he said. Funes added, today, the public who believed in hope and defeated fear have triumphed. This is a victory for all the Salvadoran people. Funes made a phone call to congratulate the rival party for their work, emphasizing that ARENA, which is Nationalist Republican Alliance, will become the opposition from now on, and in that capacity, rest assured that the party will be respected and heard. He invited various social and political groups to build a new welfare state for the people. I want to appeal to the other political forces to work toward unity, Funes said, as he promised to carry out financial actions to benefit the poor rather than the rich in order to solidify an efficient and competitive economy and a broad business base. Fun has said that, beginning with his inauguration, he will work to make El Salvador the most dynamic economy in Central America. I want to be the president of social change and reconstruction. It's time to move forward to the future and leave behind the revenges of the past, he added. Funes also said that he will collaborate with former President Elias Sakar in the last days of his administration. With the victory of Salvadoran left, the country breaks with 20 years of the rule of the Arena Party, which in these elections depended on the victory of its candidate Rodrigo Avila. According to the TSD report, 8,654 certified election results containing 90.68% of the vote were scrutinized. The victory of the FMLN was confirmed by 51.27% of the votes that it won, more than the 48.73% that went to the Conservative Arena Party. The original article, Funes, hemos firmado un nuevo acuerdo de paz y reconciliación, was published by Telesur on the 15th of March, 2009.
Thanks, Kat. So there you go. There you have it. The background information on the recent results, recent election results in El Salvador. So today in the studio, we have Matthew Andrews and Alana Epstein. Am I saying your name right?
Epstein.
Epstein. Okay. Hi.
Hello.
We are very pleased to have you guys here. And I guess tell us about yourselves.
Well, I'm Alana, and thank you so much for having us on your show. I am a Tufts University student studying peace and justice, and I've been working with Boston CISPIS for a little over 2 years now, and just got back from this elections observing delegation, which we're going to talk about, and I'm here with Matt, too, who's there.
Hi. Yeah, I was, I'm from a Jamaica Plain, and I was just got involved with CISPIS through knowing people, and had a long time interest in politics in Latin America. And I think hopefully we can talk about El Salvador and this special case, this special politics that's going on in this small country that's captured the attention of the world with this election.
Right. So for those of you who are just tuning in, today we are going to talk about the recent election result in El Salvador. And I don't exactly remember when it was, but about a few weeks ago,
yeah,
or
before
March 15th, for sure, Lisa from CISPIS came in, and it was before she went to El Salvador to observe the election. And
she's our one staff person here,
right,
in Boston.
Yeah, she was very excited, and she sent us an email that, you know, she'd like to come here, or she'd like to have some people from CISPIS to talk about the results. So yeah, that's really exciting. It's like you guys, you know, went in to see the result that you're hoping to see, I guess, and you're there like witnessing it for the first account. So I guess I just want to ask you guys to tell us more about what you saw, and I guess your observation, your perspectives on what has been going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were down there as election observers, and it's kind of an interesting status to have. The Supreme Electoral Tribunal, which was mentioned in the article that you read, gives us and gives other allows the political parties really to invite groups to observe, and there was actually a human rights group that's based in El Salvador, Fundespad, and they invited our group, so we got credentials and we went to this. I think the fanciest hotel is probably the most upscale place we were in the whole trip. It's this hotel to get accreditation, and they look at your passport, and they give you a badge and a hat and vest, and that gives you the gives us the ability to go out and actually to observe the elections. And lots of groups do this observations in order to give the Salvadoran people an outsider's perspective, kind of an impartial perspective on the democratic process in El Salvador, so that we can, and so other groups, like we met with people from the European Union, the Organization of American States, you know, who also sent international observers to be officially credited to watch the elections. And we're currently, CISPIS is preparing a full report on all of our observations and what we think were the strengths and weaknesses of the process.
And I guess I want to talk a little bit more about CISPIS as an organization and just briefly about our history and kind of what led us up to observing this election. So CISPIS has been around since 1980 when El Salvador was in the Civil War, and basically has been standing in solidarity with the people there. Always been had a role of kind of countering U.S. intervention. During the war, it was about cutting funding for U.S. weapons that were being sent to El Salvador. And as after peace accords were signed after the war, the organization kind of shifted more into like countering other forms of U.S. intervention in El Salvador, and particularly with U.S. institutions and policies in Latin America and Central America, and also with these elections. And so in 2004, there were the last presidential elections, and we also had an observing delegation. And there was a lot of kind of internal fraud that was witnessed, as well as like outside U.S. intervention. And that was witnessed again this past January in the legislative elections on many counts, which we'll get into a bit later. But basically, we've been sort of building up this mobilizing movement since January of people signing this pledge of protest to basically be willing to take action in the account of U.S. intervention. And we started seeing some of that in various forms leading up to these presidential elections in March. So we've been doing a lot of organizing around that, trying to get the word out and trying to kind of take as many preventative steps as possible. But we really did some kind of very immediate direct action while we were on this delegation in El Salvador, which was really exciting. So that's a little bit of background info leading up to what we were doing in El Salvador.
Sorry. So what is what does it mean to be an observer of a political process in another country? And because I'm assuming that most people, the vast majority of people, have not been on such delegation with any other, you know, and they have not had that experience. So what does it mean to be in that on such a job, for example? And what were your experiences where you were there? What did you see? And you know, what stories do you have to bring?
Mm-hmm. Well, we were. To be an observer is a very, it's kind of an interesting status. While CISPIS does a lot of work throughout the year to support this freedom of the in democracy in El Salvador, where El Salvador is a very politically divided country between the two main political parties, the FMLN and ARENA. But on election day, we have to really we have to be neutral, and as observers we go in to watch the whole voting process. So we were told which like specific polling places, communities that where we felt where our allies in El Salvador said we feel like we need international observers here. This generally because, you know, these are communities where they suspect fraud might be happening or there might be difficulties with the polling process. So we got sent out. I went to La Union, which was a department way out in the eastern part of the country, almost in the border with Honduras, and went to a community called Santa Rosa de Lima. And it's just a little, really not a very big community, but people came in from voting from around the surrounding areas as well. There were 50 voting tables outside, and we took, you know, we took pictures, we talked to people. We're there for anybody who wants to make a statement, anybody who wants to make a statement about the voting process. If somebody's, you know, feels like their rights were denied, they can report it to us, and we take those. And generally, we have the same privileges as poll workers in terms of, you know, I mean, we're supposed to be, you know, not interfering with the process, but we can be present and observing and taking pictures, which is good, because not all of us, you know, we spoke varying levels of Spanish, so for some people the picture taking was more effective, really relied on as a way to kind of, it's not intervention, but it's a way of saying, oh, you're being watched, so people are more likely to be careful about, you know, if they want to be, if they're trying to commit fraud and you start taking their picture, even though you don't really have any authority, it still kind of makes people think twice about committing that kind of fraud. And sometimes you can just say something like, shouldn't you be doing it this way? Isn't this the way that is the way the rules say you should do it? And people, in generally, people be like, oh yeah, that is how we should be doing it. And you just kind of, you know, because these poll workers are, you know, they're doing the process probably for the first time too, and it's a very complex voting process to try and make sure that some people who aren't even literate can have the right to vote, and people, you know, these polling places that are outdoors that are just set up on cardboard with plastic tables and cardboard signs telling you which table to go to.
Is this the first year that they are organizing something like this, where they have poll workers or observers coming in to help out? Or
No, this is, I don't know how many years this has been happening. I know that at least CISPIS has been sending like election observers down for many years. And I'm assuming that these other groups have also been. There are also Salvadoran groups there, like the PDDH, which is a human rights organization, had a bunch of observers. So it seemed like it was a pretty kind of institutionalized thing, mm-hmm. That has been happening for a little while.
Why is this election so significant?
Good question. Well, so this is pretty much the first time the left has been in power.
Like the history of the entire
ever.
Country.
Yeah, in El Salvador. And it's very significant because the right-wing parties that most recently ARENA that have been in charge of the country have just been so oppressive in so many various ways, and really not a party representing the people. It's kind of the small, wealthy minority that has all of the money and controls the country, but isn't representing the views of the people. And the FMLN is a political party that formed out of basically the guerrilla movement in the war, was like all these different groups, and they kind of joined into this one group that kind of transformed from an armed rebel group to a political party. And so they have, it's kind of interesting because they have a lot of ties to the war, and a lot of people, like opponents, will be like, oh, like these guerrillas are in power, but it really has transformed into a party, and a party that is speaking for the people of El Salvador. And it's also really amazing because of some of this fraud we've seen in the past and recently. I would say one of the most major forms of it is all these on the voter registry, like there are all these names of people who aren't actually voting. There are a lot of dead people, people who live in the United States. And basically what the right wing has been paying foreigners and other Salvadorans to vote in, to get these fake ID cards and vote in the names of dead people and people who are U.S. residents.
or Salvadorans in the United States.
1/4 of the Salvadoran population is in the United States, too. This is
right.
Which I think speaks to how dire the economic situation there really is, that there are so many people who've come, and we've actually had friends here in the Boston area who from El Salvador who say, oh, I talked to my sister in El Salvador, and she looked at the voting rolls, and she saw that, you know, I'd voted twice, my current name and then my maiden name, and you know, and people from the United States can't vote people from El Salvador can only vote in El Salvador. They can't vote from the United States. So clearly somebody stole her identity to use it to vote.
Yeah, there's no absentee voting. So basically the whole system is really corrupt, and that's just one of the ways. Like, there's vote buying. Like, if you take a picture of your vote and show it to someone, people will give you money. So we were on Election Day, actually, that was something else we were watching for. And the FMLN has been so ahead in the polls, not only this election, but the last presidential election, but we saw an Arena victory. And it was really significant this time. It was clear how much kind of the solidarity movement and the FMLN had done to counter this fraud and intervention, how it actually worked this time, whereas it wasn't quite enough last time, even though if it had been a fair election, the polls indicated that the FMLN would have taken the victory 5 years ago. So
why did that happen? Like, you said that FLMN, am I saying it right?
Yeah.
I'm like scared that I'm saying it wrong. The party has contributed to make the election more fair. Like, how? What do you mean by that?
I guess I was thinking, like, with the observers and things like that.
Oh, I see. With, like, more help from the outsiders.
Not, like, basically, like, the Arena party has been smearing the FMLN with various campaigns, tying them to terrorists, saying that it'll be the end to U.S. relations if the FMLN comes into power, especially in the form of money that Salvadorans in the U.S. send home to their families. There have been various statements from different ends saying that these remittances will be cut off if the FMLN is voted for. And for the most part, from what we've seen, the FMLN has kept it like a fair campaign that hasn't been doing these dirty tactics that we've seen mm-hmm. from Arena.
Oh, go ahead, Mary. Mary has a question.
I was just wondering, while you were there, did you actually see people trying to commit fraud and stuff like that? And if you did, what did it look like? And you also mentioned before that you noticed the stuff with U.S. intervention. So I was wondering if there were signs of that when you were there.
Well, the biggest form of intervention was definitely coming from the halls of our very own Congress, where there were Republican politicians saying that they were going to cut off remittances, which is money that Salvadorans here in the United States are sending back home, which amounts for 17% of El Salvador's economy, and to reevaluate the, I believe it's called TIPS, which is the temporary
TPS.
Which is the immigration status for a lot of Salvadorans who are living here in the United States. So there's a real fear that if a left-wing government like the FMLN is elected, that it'll hurt the relationship with the United States and result in people getting deported or not being able to send money home to families. And it's it's an economic threat. It's like, and we saw this actually in a smaller sense, even in El Salvador. We read in an article in a newspaper that said employers should tell their employees that they have to vote for Arena or else they're going to lose their jobs. And so that was the kind of intimidation. Fortunately, we were able to respond very quickly. We made phone calls to our Congress people. We got CISPIS chapters with people still here in the United States who are watching the process. We got them to make phone calls, and we put pressure on the U.S. Embassy while we were in El Salvador, and we got the State Department to put out a statement saying that they would respect the results of the election and whomever was work with whomever was elected. But this is a message that's very hard to get out because the media is privately owned and privately owned by very wealthy interests that have a vested interest in remaining in power with ARENA. So these Republican Congress people really aren't in power, but here in the United States, but they get a lot of, they don't, these threats are kind of empty threats, but they still carry a lot of weight in El Salvador. And we were very happy to be able to get that message out. And the embassy actually followed up and confirmed this and put this message out to the media in El Salvador.
Right. Yeah, it was right like on the front of the embassy page. And we'd been working toward this. We had this letter that we had like 33 Congress people sign to Obama, asking to respect the election results and agree to work respectfully with whoever is in power. So this was like a huge, huge victory, and happened like these congressional statements happened like something like 5 days before the presidential election. And then we got these opposing statements like a couple days later. So it was all like really fast. And to touch on your other question, about actual fraud that we saw, a couple of the stories that we heard from people who were on our 60-something person delegation were, one was the night before the election, there was a call about these buses coming in through one of the borders, through the Salvadoran border, and one of them was a truck that was filled with people, and there was also a truck filled with mattresses, and they were basically both heading straight to ARENA headquarters. And there were these foreigners getting bussed in to sleep the night before the election so they could vote the next day. And this was an account that a couple of us saw, but there were also accounts from all across the borders of the country, police and also FMLN members stopping these trucks and buses of foreigners. A lot of them got arrested and sent back, but, you know, who knows how many number of them actually made it in to vote. And there was also someone witnessed on election day. There was this this ARENA, I think one of the table workers or one of the ARENA workers for the elections, he like someone saw him kind of like running and like climbing up this fence, and then this FMLN woman like came and chased him and grabbed him and like pulled his pants down kind of, and he fell like off the fence, and he had these like folders and it fell out of his pants, and he had all of these vote tally sheets, which are called actas. He had stuffed them in his pants and he was trying to run off with them. So fortunately he didn't succeed, and I guess like this huge circle of like police and FMLN like came and surrounded him and got the actas back. But yeah, those were only a couple of things that people on our delegation saw, like some of the memorable stories. But yeah, the fraud was definitely out there.
Thank you guys so much for everything you've been telling us. Just to remind you, this is Sferio on WMBR, and we're speaking with some people from CISPES, and they're talking about the recent elections in El Salvador. And right now we're going to listen to some music. We're going to listen to a song called Soy Combatiente del FMLN, and it's by Los Torregoses de Marezan. And first I want to read you this about Los Torregoses. They were the first band to come out of the FMLN, and their songs are from the early days when they were a guerrilla group, so they're a bit dated now, but it's really interesting to actually hear songs associated with FMLN, and that was saying that actually
definitely heard these songs during the elections. We heard them. Our tour bus driver was playing them whenever we were going anywhere, so they're very still popular.
Yeah, so the songs you're hearing are what was being played in El Salvador a few weeks ago during the elections, so.
Un pueblo heroico como el nuestro
merece la victoria. ¡No le fallaremos!
Combatiente del FMLN,
eso sí que es cierto, compadre.
Guerrillero nacido en El Salvador.
No,
me deleitan los colores que tiene mi bandera flameante bajo el sol. Se oye el canto ancestral del Torogón, sus cantares impulsan mis afanes, mi divisa es ver libre a mi nación. Sus cantares impulsan mis afanes, mi divisa es ver libre a mi nación. Mi descanso es cumplir con mi tarea, mi deber, para que el mundo más humano sea, hemos jurado luchar hasta vencer. Mi familia es todo el pueblo pobre, mi madrecita es la revolución. Mi familia es todo el pueblo pobre, mi madrecita es la revolución. Por los cerros, vaguadas y volcanes, y oye el canto ancestral de Torobón. Mi divisa es ver libre a mi nación. Sus cantares impulsan mis afanes. Mi divisa es ver libre a mi nación. Mi descanso es cumplir con mi tarea. Mi alegría es cumplir con mi deber.
Hello, welcome back to Spherio. Here we are on WMBR Cambridge. Today we are talking to Matthew and Alana from CISPAS, and we are just having a conversation about the recent election in El Salvador. So now, I guess we should talk about the future of El Salvador. From what you saw in the country, what were the people's hopes and what's your perspective on what will happen?
Well, it was clear that the people were very hopeful, and it was sort of, the election was this campaign of hope and kind of defeating the people, overcoming fear, like this fear that has been so rampant, that's been put forth by the Arena Party for so many years. But at this, you know, people are hopeful, but at the same time, people are being very realistic from what we've seen. We've met with a lot of allied groups who are, like, really excited about, you know, the FMLN in power, but are also aware that Mauricio Funes has been kind of moderating some of his views to be more widely accepted, and also and especially more widely accepted in the United States government. And so Salvadorans are aware, like, yes, this is an amazing victory, and this is so great, and we're going to celebrate, but also we now have so much work to do, and it's not like everything's going to be instantly solved, but the struggle can really start to begin now in a way that it never has been able to before. I feel like people aren't overly optimistic or unrealistic about what's happening right now.
Well, the right wing is still very strong in El Salvador. They still control the media. I don't think Funes is. It'll be interesting to see to what degree he controls the military and the police. It's the state in general. It's in debt, and he doesn't have the kind of power that is really needed to take on bold new projects. But like Alana said, I think that people are, from what we saw, people are saying, now at least, there'll be a government that isn't trying to prosecute us and shut us down.
Do you think that maybe an action of by Funes of, pursuing those who committed crimes during the Civil War will be, seen as too provocative? Will that depart it from the moderate position that he's trying to stand for? What would people in the United States, the government in the United States, think about that?
Well, he was he's really just going along with past practices. After the peace accords in 1992, there was almost immediately, I believe, a law of basically amnesty was passed. So it's already, they would be going back on El Salvadoran law. In order to prosecute people who committed, basically, we're talking about war crimes. We're talking about crimes against civilians, innocents during the 80s. So I think there's a popular sentiment that should be done, and I think it'll say something about the balance of power in El Salvador if they're able to do that, because it would be a bold thing to go back on that law and say this law wasn't democratic and to revisit it.
What's the U.S.'s position on the new result? Are they happy about it?
Basically, right after Funes was elected, Obama came out and congratulated him, which was kind of like going along with the stuff we saw from the United States right before the election, which is amazing. But we haven't seen much as of yet. It's sort of hard to tell where things are going in that respect. We have heard Funes talking about certain trade policies, like, he's talked about revising CAFTA, which the Central American Free Trade Agreement, but not, necessarily trying to get rid of it. It's all been kind of framed in like this moderate sort of gradual shifting to the left. And it's just going to be really interesting to see how that happens, because the FMLN is a radically left party, it seems like there's a little bit of perhaps divide between what Funes is portraying to the media and to the United States and what the FMLN wants and more directly stands for. So, but we're still waiting to hear more from the Obama administration. It seems like those things are in lieu of being developed right now.
Well, we actually did get a few people to get into the embassy after a lot of back and forth negotiations. We actually did get to go in there, and one of our delegate members suggested to the workers at the U.S. Embassy that the Obama administration could demonstrate their interest in building a new relationship with Latin America by voluntarily initiating a renegotiation of the CAFTA agreements, which are these basically, in a nutshell, free trade agreements that allow foreign corporations to come in and invest money in mega projects. We didn't get a response to that, but the bug is in their ear that this is something that people want.
So we, well, thank you again for all this conversation we have been having. We don't have that much time, of course. It's only 1 hour program. But so before we pass to anuncios and to some party announcement also, what do you want to add about what the work of CISPES is doing here in Boston, United States, mm-hmm. for the people of Salvador?
Well, we have a group here in Boston. We share a little office space in Cambridge, and Lisa, our staff person, has been working very diligently throughout our delegation to make sure the people in Boston area are aware of what's been going on in El Salvador. And I think it's really a unique relationship and two unique organizations, the FMLN in El Salvador and CISPES here in the United States. FMLN has been a very principled organization in terms of the political decisions that they make, supporting human rights, supporting democracy, fighting for the people. We're very fortunate to have partners like that to work with. And here, CISPES has been very dedicated ever since the Civil War in the 80s to being allies and watching this process.
Like Matt said, we also have an office. Like, CISPES is a national organization. We also have an office in San Salvador. And we basically get a lot of our cues and strategy and political program from the people of El Salvador. And we're kind of... So we're forming our kind of new program and strategy right now, now that the FMLN has taken the elections, and we're still, like, kind of in lieu of coming up with things that we're doing to move forward and ensuring that, you know, these results are respected in various ways. And so it seems like we're running out of time, but we can give you a couple of ways that you can get involved with the work that CISPES is doing. We have meetings usually the first Monday of every month, and if you want to get on our mailing list, you can send an email to BossCispes, BossCispes, at speakeasy.net. And what would be great for you guys to do to get involved is come to a victory party that we're having on May 1st, which is May Day, International Workers' Day, and basically celebrating May Day and the triumph of the FMLN in El Salvador. And so that's going to be... So on May Day, there's going to be this march going from East Boston and Chelsea to Everett. And then after that, at 8 p.m., there's going to be the CISPES May Day Victory Party at Encuentro Cinco. And the address for that is 33 Harrison Ave, on the fifth floor in Chinatown, Boston. And so, yeah, that's going to be 8 p.m. on May 1st. And it would be great if you could make it to that. And send us an email if you want to find out more about how to get involved also.
Thank you so much. Thanks for all the conversations that you shared with us. Before we go away, do you guys have any last comments that you guys like to make?
I'm just really excited about watching and seeing what's going to happen June 1st when Funes finally takes office.
Right. Hopefully we'll actually get to work with the Salvadoran consulate. And, you know, we'll be having parties with them instead of sending them angry letters.
Awesome. All right, we'll be playing some promo and coming back here with announcements. Or not, but we'll play the promo.
It's the heritage of modern American music. It's not hee-haw. Country, bluegrass, Cajun, Tejano, Zydeco, and Hawaiian. That's what you'll hear on Lost Highway every Saturday morning between 8 and 10 a.m. here on the Great 88 WMBR in Cambridge.
Welcome back to Spherio.
We have a few more moments of Sferio, and this is Amy Battisti-Ashe visiting you just to say that Cultural Survival would like you, and Sferio would like you, to get involved in the Panamanian situation. The Naso and Ngobe people are fighting against a huge international dam project. We had people from Cultural Survival here talking to us last semester. My God, it was forever ago. Anyway, if you go to, this is not really an annuncio, this is a request for help. If you go to the Cultural Survival website, which I believe is cs.org, right? Then they have letters that you can write to the Attorney General of Panama. And there are, in fact, videos that you can go watch and comment about that you can get links to on the Cultural Survival site as well. Basically, the AES Corporation is trying to build their dam in spite of the opposition of these two indigenous communities in Panama.
You know, I was actually there over spring break. I was doing my research on affordable housing in Panama City. And yeah, it was really interesting. And there's so much development happening, and you see a lot of poor people being forced to move out because of all the, you know, redevelopment. And I mean, they're working on developing government programs and stuff, but still more challenges. So anyways, so yeah, you guys should definitely check out the website and sign the petition. And thanks, Amy, for bringing the information for us. Oh, and this is a very special announcement, but yesterday was Mary Messerman's birthday. Woo!
Happy birthday!
Yay! Yeah, no, we're very excited. We're just, yeah, I just wanted to say that out loud and let everyone know that Mary is turning 20.
2-0.
Woo! Woo! Okay.
Oh, that's painful.
Great. Well,
I was going to say this is happy birthday music for Mary, and it's also Salvadoran music in recognition of the win in El Salvador. This is Kudumay Camones y nosotros nos vamos. Bye.
Para construir la paz hay que luchar, mi hermano. Para construir la paz hay que...
Before we go away, I just want to remind everyone that the views and opinions expressed on this show are not representing WMBR or Sferio. I mean, it is representing Sferio, but it's not representing WMBR or the Technology Broadcasting Corporation or MIIT. And you can find us at this website, which is web.mit.edu/hemisphere. So yeah, we'll talk to you guys next week. Bye!
Roja, porque no cantas estas son conmigo. Para construir la paz hay que luchar, mi hermano. Para construir la paz hay que luchar, mi hermano. Hay que saber, mi hermano, que la paz no es un decir de unos cuantos, que la paz es el derecho ser libre y soberano, es la justicia para el pueblo, victoria de la dignidad. Para construir la paz hay que luchar, mi hermano. Para construir la paz hay que luchar, mi hermano.
Pero mi hermano lo sé. Cuando le decimos,
para construir la paz hay que luchar, mi hermano.
para construir la paz. Hay que luchar, mi hermano.
No se me raje, no se me raje con vida, que ya todo el mundo.